meet the motherboard.
5 warrior moms, 12 kids, and that includes 2 sets of twins.
And a whole lot of opinions.
Hey guys, welcome to the Motherboard Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Whitney Leigh Green, and today I am joined by Taylor Ponce and Arthi Subramaniam. Hey guys.
Hey Whitney. Hey Arthi.
Hey, afternoon.
So today we are going to talk about an age-old topic for working moms, and that's mom guilt. And sort of what spurred us to create this episode was an article I came across in the Wall Street Journal about a book called Power Moms that was written by a columnist, Joan Loveland. And she looked at, she wrote a book where she kind of studied 2 different generations of CEO moms. And among those generations, what has gotten better and what hasn't gotten better? And I think mom guilt sort of plays into some of the reasons why I think things have not gotten better, as she pointed out. So with that in mind, let's talk about some of the points she made. So a couple of the things she noted as being better were advances in technology, which, like, thank you, Captain Obvious. Right. Like, without the internet, none of us are working from home. So that's kind of an obvious gimme. Better workplaces. And by that, she means workplaces that are more family friendly, and also that there are now more senior women in those workplaces who make them more family friendly and who serve as role models. And I think we all have kind of talked about that in the past. And then the third thing she talked about was having more involved and supportive spouses or partners, which we've also sort of talked about in the past. Are there other things that you guys would say have gotten better? You know, if you're thinking about, say, you know, our parents' generation and our generation.
Well, yeah, I mean, from the law perspective, you know, Arthi and I actually touched on this in a recent episode, just maternity leave policies being better. And other big companies, your Google, Salesforce, Salesloft, big companies like that having good policies, having the physical buildings, having things like nursing rooms or family rooms where women can do what they need to do if they're nursing, have refrigerators, things like that. So I think the actual physical spaces of the buildings has improved, as well as maternity leave policies and just in general people having children later in life. I think I've also seen insurance policies get better in terms of fertility treatments that have been covered and issues like that, that take it out of the typical traditional policies that we had previously seen.
To your point, Taylor, not too long ago, pregnancy was considered a pre-existing condition. So if you happen to be pregnant and were signing on with a new job, you might get employer-provided insurance, but the policy would not necessarily cover your prenatal care and delivery. So that's something that's definitely better now.
Well, and considering, I mean, we all know how expensive it is to have a baby these days. Can you imagine doing it and have to, you know, you have to pay out of pocket? Like, you're not going to change careers if that's,
right,
if that's what you're looking at. So some of the things she looked at that she said were worse or the same, probably is a better way to say that, is that what she calls the third shift. And by third shift, she means all of these sort of extra mom/parent duties. So taking your kid to the doctor, you know, staying home when they're sick, that those sort of things still fall disproportionately to women. And so I think the question is why? And she noted that women are hiding it less. So we're open about the fact that we've got to leave to take care of our kids, which is probably good. But I think there's still a question about why we're bearing the brunt of that burden in the first place. And one of the things she said that she thought was the reason for that is essentially that we can look at ourselves, that women feel like they have to do those things to be a good mom, and that people, you know, will see them as not a good mom if they're not the one, you know, if they miss the doctor's appointment, if they're not the one who picks their kids up. So what do you guys think about that? Do you think, should we be blaming ourselves?
I mean, the irony for me is that there's mom guilt at work and there's mom guilt at home. And I think that the mom guilt at home, so to speak, is sort of where it stems from. Do other moms think that I'm a bad mom if my husband's the one that takes my sick kid to the doctor? I think that's where a lot of moms feel the insecurity is, maybe even more so in their peer group as opposed to at work, that they feel like they need to be the one running those appointments and doing those pickups and drop-offs and being the mystery reader in class and doing all those things. And that, you know, goes into the workforce because they feel that own personal guilt. You know, it's the same with like how you feed your kids. Some women feel that there's pressure from other women that they have to nurse their child versus bottle feeding. I mean, for me, I just felt like I cannot please everyone. And the only people I need to please are myself and my husband. And a fed baby is a fed baby, whether it's by bottle or otherwise. So I really tried to remove that type of guilt early on. One of the ways you can easily do that is to have twins the first go round, and you're just surviving. I was just hoping that I was able to feed two babies. I really didn't care that even at the hospital, they were encouraging me to breastfeed my kids. And I was like, I got two babies to feed. That's two bottles by two parents. That's the best method for us. And I really didn't let other people's expectations dictate what I did because I was just trying to survive. But I would imagine that a lot of people feel the stress from other mothers on how to do things. And I'm not just talking about obviously how you feed your children. But are they the parent that goes to the practice? Are they the parent that goes to the doctor? A lot of that is peer pressure.
And I'd like to advocate for normalizing it when our spouses take over those duties. And, you know, they don't necessarily deserve a merit badge for doing what parents have, you know, what women have been doing for centuries. One of the things that I'm trying to do, and it's very, very small, but I'm trying to normalize it just in the way we talk. You know, if I go away for a conference and my kids are with my husband for 2 days, 3 days, invariably somebody stops and says, "Oh, but where are your kids?"
I bet that's so
like, "Oh my God, you're right. I totally forgot about them. No, they're with their dad." And or the best one is your husband babysitting?
It's like, no, it's still parenting.
He's parenting. Exactly. He's not getting paid to do this. This is what he does.
It's so true. And you have to, I mean, you kind of have to make a joke about it. Where are my kids? Yeah. Well, they're with their dad. You know, the other person who's responsible for them. But yeah, I think you have to call people on it, and there's no, you know, bad intent behind it. But it, I can guarantee you when my husband goes away for business, nobody asks him where are his three kids.
Nobody. Right. And because it's part of the normalization process.
But you know, I think I do, having thought about this, which I had not thought about before, have to own a little bit of, I think I make my own life harder than it has to be by feeling a combo, I think, of feeling guilty. And I think that's sort of built in by the fact that you're working. Although I would say to anyone who asks me, no, I don't feel guilty about going to work because that's just part of my life. You know, no, men don't feel guilty about going to work. It's assumed they'll go back to work. But I think that kind of, no matter how much I tell myself that mantra, there's probably a little bit of that somewhere below the surface that kind of bleeds over into these other things. And I think it's probably a little bit of guilt and also a little bit of the fact that I'm very type A and like to know exactly what's happening. And so if my husband takes him to the doctor, he's probably not going to ask the right questions. And then I'm probably not going to get all the information I want on the other side. And, you know, whether or not that he actually failed to, you know, ask, quote, in air quotes, the right questions might be TBD. But in my mind, that's probably what will happen.
Totally. You called yourself type A. I'll just go ahead and say, like, I'm a control freak. And, you know, I laugh because my husband is incredibly capable and incredibly smart, but I'm still a control freak and feel like it's just easier if I did it myself. That being said, I am happy to delegate other tasks like school drop off and pick up. He can do that all day long. Whereas I might choose to go to the doctor's appointment because I want to control and micromanage that aspect of it. But I have no problems saying, hey, I got to do something for work, or I need a minute to myself. You need to do dinner tonight. And it's no issue, just like it's no issue when he wants to do something and I'll take care of it. So I think just constantly sharing in those responsibilities and not making it a designated mom or dad thing, but saying, this is important to me, I'd like to do this, or are you able to do that, really, really helps. And obviously, you know, we say this knowing the privilege that comes from having a spouse that can help out. And that I wish I had an answer for those that didn't have support of a partner. Yeah, it does fall on that person a lot. And I wish I had an answer for those people in that situation. But I'm very cognizant of the fact that I appreciate having, you know, a partner that can help me through this, because it is certainly hard. It is hard to get it all done.
So the other point that she brought up that I also thought was interesting about why, you know, the third shift, as she calls it, falls disproportionately to women, is that men are still in large numbers in workplaces where it's less acceptable for them to leave work. And related to that, and Juliana actually talked about this in the Intranet that I recorded with her, is that companies are increasingly offering paternity leave, but men don't take it. And so I think that that's, you know, an interesting, and Juliana's point, which I think is really brilliant, is that men have to take leave. Men have to take advantage of the opportunities that they have to do these sorts of things so that women don't have to. You know, it's that, you know, you need paternity leave so that men can do it, so that maybe women who would like to go back to work earlier, I wasn't ready to go back before 12 weeks, but that way you have the choice and it's
well,
not.
And it lessens the dad guilt. You know, maybe the dad guilt is reversed, that they feel guilty if they work in a company that doesn't support them taking time off. And so maybe there's a guilt in that way. It's just sort of the reverse. I think one of the ways that we can do that, and, you know, I listened to a podcast on this woman recently, but Whitney Wolf Hurd, the CEO of Bumble, she recently took Bumble public, and the picture of her, you know, signing, she had her baby on her hip. And I just thought, wow, that is like, that is so incredible. And I loved that picture of her. And she was so inspiring to me. And obviously it goes without saying, you know, she probably has all the support in the world, but what the real impact there is, seeing her on magazines and seeing her all over social media signing with her baby on the hip, is that it's normalizing that women or parents in general can do both. You can take a company, you know, from the ground up, literally, and still also be a parent to young children or older children at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how she got to where she did. I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of hard work. I don't know her exact trajectory. I just know that by seeing that and having employers see that, it's making an impact on the business world and for all professional parents, because it's making it obvious that you can do both. And it's like you say, it's normalizing it. You know, it's not just Heard, it's also, you know, Tammy Duckworth having a child on the Senate floor. It's the Prime Minister of New Zealand having a child, you know, in office. It's members of Parliament in Britain bringing their children to work while they cast votes. It's making the world realize that, you know, we don't stop being mothers because we're working, but we don't necessarily have to stop working just because we become mothers.
Totally. Totally.
And I think, you know, to the point you guys are making, there are employers out there who see a young or a younger woman, you know, someone in their 20s or early 30s coming in the door, and they're not going to ask her this because they can't. But in the back of their mind and considering her for a job, they're thinking, is she going to have kids? And if so, how many? Or how many kids does she have? And, you know, what does her life look like in that respect? And I think when we see women, you know, like taking a company public is literally, you know, the zenith, really, I think, right, in the corporate world. And mm-hmm. if women are doing that with children so young that, you know, you're holding them on your hip, so they're very young, then what can't they do? You mean, you know, your associate can't, you know, have a child and bill some hours at work? I mean, that's if women are doing that, there's literally nothing we can't do.
There is nothing
we can give them the chance.
I mean, there was a time when we were told, you know, don't wear a wedding ring during an interview. Don't volunteer any details about your personal life.
Right.
And that might, maybe that's still the best advice to give people, but I love that this is essentially paving the way to stop asking those questions about when are they going to stop having kids or when are they done with that? Because it doesn't matter.
Right. Well, I saw a story on LinkedIn that sort of challenged that notion of if you have young kids, that's a weakness as opposed to, you know, a strength where she had lost her job and she was redoing her resume. And instead of listing all the business experience she had, she started listing all the traits she had that related to her being a mom, like multitasker, you know, able to cook with one hand while holding a baby in another, like, you know, all those things that you do as a mom, able to juggle multiple schedules at one time from demanding clients. And it was sort of meant to be a joke where she listed these things as her resume skills. But, you know, it's actually quite true. And it just goes to show that this old notion of being a working mom was a weakness, that actually being a working mom is a huge strength.
So let's do this, you guys. I'd love to hear sort of from each of you, tell me the aspect of mom guilt that you most struggle with in your lives. And if the answer is you don't, I think that's important too. But I'd love to hear, you know, what it's kind of the biggest thing that weighs on each of you.
So I've actually done both. You know, I was working with my first child. I was back to work full time within 3 months. But with my second, I actually took a year off to not work. And I just wanted to take care of her during that time. But while I was out, I will admit to having a lot of fear of missing out. And I didn't so much have mom guilt as I had career guilt. I kind of had career envy as I was watching all of these women who were having their children and yet like rocketing in their career. And I knew I had taken that step away for that year, you know, because I wanted to sort of regroup and think about how I wanted to form my career path. But all I could think about is, hey, they're doing it. So, you know, what am I missing? So it's kind of the opposite of my mom guilt. I had career guilt at that point.
I will say that I am one of those people. I don't have a ton of mom guilt. And I think it's for a couple of reasons. One, I have a self-employed husband, which means he has a flexible schedule. And when you have twins to begin with, I couldn't control everything because I physically needed help doing two babies. So he was very, very, very hands-on from the absolute get-go. I mean, he was doing tons of overnight feeds and all the things that I was doing, he truly was doing in the beginning. I mean, I've since had a third baby, and I know it's just easier for one person to do one baby. So it's not that I don't want to be a husband basher who says that husbands don't help out, but when you have two babies, there's just no choice for one person to do it. So my husband was very, very capable, very, very early on. And I think that has helped. So I don't have a ton of mom guilt in asking him to do things that are more stereotypically, you know, division of labor goes to the woman. But I also think that I've made a conscientious decision to not apologize to my family, but also not apologize to my work when I make the other a priority. So from early on, if I needed to leave work because of something related to my family, or I couldn't take a deposition because of childcare issues, I didn't apologize for it. And I also didn't lie about it. So if opposing counsel said, hey, can you do this on Friday at 10 a.m.? I said no, because of my, or like my kids are not in school at that time and I have childcare responsibilities or whatever it was. Like if that was the reason why I couldn't do something, then I said that was the reason, and I didn't try to hide it. And similarly, if my kids ask me to do something and I have to work or I can't show up at school and I have to, you know, ask my husband to be the one that shows up for whatever day it is, I say, you know, mommy has to work, and I don't apologize about it to them either. I also am very intentional about the narrative that I use in at the house when I talk about work. I don't make it like a bad thing, like, ugh, I have to miss that because I have to work, or, oh, mommy has to go to work today. I don't say it like that. I say it as a positive thing. I talk about it positively all the time. And that has helped me. So I'm just sort of framing the narrative that it's not a bad thing. And so it helps me sort of manage that guilt. And it also works. Like, I'm happy with my work-life balance, and I have seen so many people not happy with their work-life balance. So for me, I think that that means it's working, and that helps me sort of temper any of that potential guilt. I think if I had to point to anything that I had mom guilt about, it would be just the stress level, and needing to, I'm not very good at separating the stress of work for when I need to be present at home. So that's probably the thing I need to work on most, is not letting my stress at work play into any type of shortness of temper or my willingness to be present with my kids when, you know, I'm not working.
Yeah, I think that's one thing my husband and I have both tried, which is not really a mom thing. I think it's a parent thing, have tried to be conscious of, is that we get so little time with our kids during the day. And so, you know, for that, like, I mean, I think they're home usually at 5:30 and we put them to bed at 7. So for that hour and a half, I try to put my phone across the room and turn it off. And like, I'm not going to check email for an hour and a half. And like, the world will not end, you know, if I don't respond to an email during that time. And he really tries to do the same thing. You know, we don't answer calls. We give our kids that time because I feel like for me, I mean, I'm just a perfectionist by nature, and it's impossible to be perfect as a mom because literally no matter what you do, intentional or not, there's someone out there who's going to say that's the wrong thing to do. And that also, by the way, you're ruining your kid's life by doing whatever that thing is.
Right.
So, you know, I think that my nature makes it hard enough, but this way at least I can say, you know, this is one thing I'm doing. I'm setting aside this time that's just for them. I'm making sure that I'm focused on them, to sort of to deal with it that way.
It's such a great example for your kids that you can do both, you know. And my kids, if you ask them, and they're young, all three of them are under 6, they know exactly what I do. I mean, you know, they'll say, mommy's a lawyer. I think the pinnacle for me is something came up about one of our friends, a male friend, being a lawyer. And one of my kids, one of my twins said, oh, wait, men can be lawyers too. And I mean, a stick a fork in me. I'm done with parenting after that comment. I was just
like, you win.
I've made it. But I think, you know, to me, it just proved that, okay, like, they know exactly who I am and what I am. And I think if you ask them what's the best part about mommy, it's that she plays with me. So I feel like that's the best way to do both things, is to not apologize that you're doing both things.
Exactly.
And just try to be present for each when you're there, which easier said than done.
And I, you know, for me, when I changed the trajectory of my course, a lot of that was done so that I could do both the career and the family part to the extent that I wanted. And like you say, Taylor, as a result, I don't really have a lot of guilt as such, because I'm spending the time I want to spend with my kids. I'm spending the time I want to spend with my career. And while I'm doing one, I don't apologize for the other. And I think that a lot of that is also just our language. You know, I try to say what I mean and mean what I say, and I don't offer up my family as if it's an excuse or that needs to be justified. It's just, that's life.
Yeah.
You know, I have an obligation, and that's the end of that.
Right.
I assume that the people I'm dealing with are going to understand that. And if they don't, then I hope that they're going to be in for a surprise, because the world's changing.
Well, they need to listen to this podcast then.
I also think that the pandemic, you know, for all of the bad things, I think it's sort of forced everyone to be more flexible and more, you know, gracious and reasonable to the people they're dealing with. I mean, you know, when people, especially, you know, at the beginning, when everyone was literally working from home with their kids, you don't have a choice. If you used to hide it, you can't now, because there might be a 3-year-old running through the bathroom.
Remember the expert whose baby and toddler crashed his call?
Totally.
Yeah, and right. His wife had to run in the room and grab them both. I mean, that was news 2 years ago. That's what's happened to everybody in the last
year. I feel like you're like almost, if you're having a contentious deposition, what's going to like break the tension better than like a guest appearance by a baby?
Exactly. Absolutely. As I always say, if it's not my kid, it's white noise. Like, I don't even notice it. But I think it normalizes it, and it kind of just makes us real. Like, it doesn't need to be perfect. I'm okay if you need to stop a deposition because, you know, the nurse calls from school. Like, that's okay. That's normal. We're all people, and we're not robots. And I can still do a really good job in that deposition, even if I have to stop because the school nurse is calling.
I think it actually improved our interpersonal relations to some degree because we're forced to see the humanity in each other.
Right.
That's what I was about to say. I think especially doing what, you know, we do, where it's very adversarial, when you know about people's family and their family lives, it's a lot harder to see them as just like, you know, this robot jerk who's here to ruin your life, because you're like, right. Well, how could they be like a robot jerk if they've got this cute baby at home? So, you know, I think what you're saying is exactly right, Arthi, that it might even make, you know, some of the unnecessary tension. I mean, there's always going to be a certain amount, but I happen to be of the mindset that like, if I can like get along as much as I can while doing, you know, the best job I can for my client, you know, I'm going to be a killer when I need to be, but like when I can go along to get along, I'm not going to fight with you about things I don't have to. So, I think this goes a long way maybe to sort of making that more of the norm.
Right.
Than it used to be. So with that said, it's time for our favorite way to end the podcast, which is to talk about something that we are loving or hating this week. So I'll toss it to you guys. Who wants to go first?
I have a good one this week. I am listening to a book on Audible. It's called Green Lights, and it's Matthew McConaughey's book. Y'all, it is so good. First of all, it's like several hours of Matthew McConaughey's voice, which is like just in and of itself, like could put me to sleep.
Yeah, he could read the phone book and I would be here to listen to it.
It is so good. He is so weird, so odd, so bright. He is far more intelligent than I ever knew and lived a really crazy childhood. I mean, his book is so good. I had no idea how much of an intellect he is. I mean, he addresses the bongo situation, but also tells you so much about his childhood. And I'm not even all the way done, so there's so much to get through. But his childhood was crazy. And he just talks about, you know, everything under the sun. It's all in his voice. It is so entertaining. So whenever you have some free time, you can put it on in the background. It's called Green Lights. I'm doing it on Audible. You can get like free 30-day trial on Audible if you don't already subscribe. But he is just so entertaining, and I had no idea what a crazy life he's led. So it's Matthew McConaughey, Green Lights.
Wow. Okay. Well, mine is far less intellectual than Taylor's. I truly admire people who do all sorts of intellectual pursuits in their free time. I'm just super excited that the weather is warming up and I can get my kids outside again. It is doing wonders for them, and I forgot just how wonderful fresh air and public parks can be. And we've taken advantage of the time to safely do some outdoor activities, like taking them to the Atlanta Zoo. And we're hoping to make it to the Botanical Gardens. It was raining this past weekend, but one thing I would like to plug for the Botanical Gardens is anybody who happened to get a season pass like we did last year, a whole 2 weeks before everything shut down, the Botanical Garden did extend membership through Memorial Day weekend. So I think it gave us at least an extra 2 months to try to go and take advantage of the blooms, which are supposed to be really nice right now.
Yeah, they also have discounts on membership. We live a mile from there, so I just renewed our membership at the Botanical Gardens, and it's great. And I got an extra month and a discount. I love it.
And there's so many cool places for kids to play there.
So Arthi totally stole mine because I was going to say the weather.
Oh, no.
But instead I will choose something very mundane, but to the extent, you know, there are working parents listening to it, this really has changed my life. And it is one of those, I don't even know what it's called because I was not prepared to talk about it, But the Dyson, the little cordless Dyson vacuum.
Yeah.
I got one of those recently, and it has changed my life. Like, we have food everywhere with three kids, and you don't have to plug it in. You can just whip it out and, like, run it only on the areas of your house that people see when they enter. And so it's great, and it probably doesn't need a plug because I think everyone owns a Dyson vacuum. I think there might even be one in the background of Arthi's camera that I'm looking at
I know. It's basically either you need a dog or you need a handheld vacuum. I did the handheld as well. I don't have.
Now, we have the upstairs one and the downstairs one.
Well, thanks for joining us, everybody, on this week's episode of The Motherboard. We hope you enjoyed it. Please subscribe. And as always, if you have any suggestions for good topics, we'd love to hear from you.
Thanks, y'all.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Motherboard.
Thank you for listening to The Motherboard.
Thank you for listening to The Motherboard.
Five attorney mothers, never bored.